Hello and welcome back to the Actual News Podcast. Today is Monday, December 30th, and today I have for you, former President Carter passes away at 100. Biden announces $2.5 billion in security assistance for Ukraine. White House proposes cybersecurity overhaul and more national and global news. Let's go. But first, let's begin with some quick news. A federal appeals court on Monday today upheld a $5 million verdict in favor of E. Jean Carroll, who had sued Donald Trump after a jury found the U.S. president-elect liable for sexually abusing and later defaming the former magazine columnist. U.S. President-elect Trump criticized the 2023 debt ceiling extension on Sunday, calling it the dumbest political decision made in years. Mikhail Kvalishvili, a vocal critic of the West, was sworn in as the president of Georgia on Sunday amid a political crisis following the government's decision to freeze European Union application talks, a move that has sparked major protests. Finnish police said on Sunday that they had discovered tracks stretching for dozens of kilometers along the bottom of the Baltic Sea, where a tanker carrying Russian oil is suspected of damaging a power line and four telecom cables with its anchor. Hostages held in Gaza were subjected to torture, including sexual and psychological abuse, starvation, burns, and medical neglect, according to a new report by the Israeli Health Ministry that is set to be submitted to United Nations this week. Israeli forces conducting a weeks-long offensive in northern Gaza ordered any remaining residents of Beit Hanun to leave the town on Sunday, citing Palestinian militant rocket fire from the area, according to residents. Holding elections in Syria could take up to 4 years, according to Syria's de facto leader, Ahmed al-Sharaa, who spoke in an interview with Al Arabiya on Sunday. This marks the first time al-Sharaa has provided a potential timeline for elections since Bashar al-Assad was ousted earlier this month. The UK government has confirmed that Asma al-Assad, the wife of Syrian President Bashar al-Assad, is not allowed to enter the country where she holds citizenship. This decision effectively prevents her from returning to the UK, where she was born, and suggests that she will likely remain in Russia for the foreseeable future. And now to our main story today, honoring a legacy. Jimmy Carter, advocate for peace, passes away at 100. Former U.S. President and champion of peace, human rights, and global diplomacy passed away on Sunday, December 29th, at the age of 100. The news was first reported by the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. From his humble beginnings in Plains, Georgia, to his tenure as the 39th President of the United States, Carter's life was a testament to unwavering service and compassion. His presidency was marked by significant achievements, most notably the Camp David Accords, which brokered peace between Egypt and Israel and became a cornerstone of his diplomatic legacy. After leaving the White House, Carter's impact only grew. Together with his beloved wife, Rosalind, he founded the Carter Center in 1982, dedicating their lives to combating diseases, overseeing elections, and promoting democracy and human rights worldwide. His humanitarian efforts earned him the Nobel Peace Prize, solidifying his place as one of the most respected global figures of our time. I had the honor of meeting President Carter in 2014 in Manhattan. He graciously signed a copy of his book for me, and we shared a meaningful conversation. Since then, I eagerly awaited his Thanksgiving greetings each year, which always included this heartfelt message and a family photo. This year marked the first without Rosalind by his side, a loss deeply felt by all who admired their extraordinary partnership. So while the news of President Carter's passing is profoundly saddening, we also find solace in knowing he is now reunited with Rosalind forever by his side. Their bond was a true testament to love and shared service, inspiring countless individuals around the world. May he rest in well-deserved peace. To honor Carter's legacy, President Biden has ordered U.S. flags to be flown at half-staff for 30 days, including at all public buildings, military posts, naval stations, and U.S. embassies abroad. Biden has also designated January 9, 2025, as a National Day of Mourning, encouraging Americans to gather in places of worship to honor Carter's memory. The global community is invited to join in this observance. U.S. government agencies and executive departments will close on January 9th in accordance with an executive order issued by President Biden. Stock exchanges will also remain closed that day. A state funeral will be held at Washington National Cathedral, where President Biden will deliver a eulogy for Carter. This solemn occasion will follow 6 days of ceremonies in Georgia and Washington, D.C., celebrating Carter's life and legacy. The ceremonies will be held from January 4th. Including up to January 9th. President Biden addressed the nation in broadcasted speech from the U.S. Virgin Islands, where he is currently vacationing with his family on the day of President Carter's passing. In a statement, China's President Xi Jinping expressed his condolences, emphasizing Carter's pivotal role in establishing diplomatic ties between the United States and China more than 40 years ago. International leaders and former U.S. presidents followed with heartfelt tributes, underscoring Carter's profound influence on fostering global relationships. I invite you to join me tomorrow for the actual news on December 31st at 9:30 a.m., where I will provide detailed readout of the planned funeral services in Georgia and Washington, D.C., as shared with me today by the Pentagon, and I will answer all your questions and explain how you can honor and commemorate the legacy of President Jimmy Carter. And if you wish to travel, or you are in Georgia or Washington, D.C., where and when you can do so. In other news, President Joe Biden has announced nearly $2.5 billion in security assistance for Ukraine to support its defense against Russian aggression. This package includes $1.25 billion military drawdown and a $1.22 billion Ukraine Security Assistance Initiative aimed at providing both immediate and long-term military capabilities. The assistance will deliver critical weapons systems, including air defense and artillery, and will help replenish U.S. defense stockpiles. Biden reiterated the commitment to rapidly surging aid to Ukraine and ensuring its continued defense efforts. With the U.S. military delivering essential equipment like artillery rounds and armored vehicle to strengthen Ukraine as winter approaches. Here's a quote from President Biden. As I committed earlier this year, the DoD has now allocated all remaining USAI funds appropriated by Congress in the supplemental that I signed in April, and my administration is fully utilizing the funding appropriated by Congress to support the drawdown of U.S. equipment for Ukraine. I've directed my administration to continue surging as much assistance to Ukraine as quickly as possible, including drawing down older U.S. equipment for Ukraine, rapidly delivering it to the battlefield, and then revitalizing the U.S. defense industrial base to modernize and replenish our stockpiles with new weapons. The U.S. will continue supporting Ukraine throughout Biden's time in office. Secretary of the Treasury Janet Yellen announced the disbursement of $3.4 billion in direct budget support for Ukraine, emphasizing the critical role of U.S. financial aid in Ukraine's defense against Russia's aggression. The assistance is part of the final disbursement under the bipartisan Ukraine Security Supplemental Appropriations Act 2024. It is conditioned on Ukraine implementing reforms aimed at strengthening law enforcement, enhancing transparency, and fighting corruption. Yellen highlighted the importance of Ukraine's success for U.S. national security and global stability, underscoring that Russia, not American taxpayers, will bear the costs of its illegal war. The U.S. remains committed to supporting Ukraine through both financial aid and sanctions on Russia's war efforts. U.S. Treasury also has warned lawmakers that extraordinary measures may be required as early as January 14th to prevent the United States from defaulting on its debt. In a letter to Congress, Yellen urged swift action to protect the nation's creditworthiness. The Treasury anticipates $54 billion reduction in U.S. debt on January 2nd, tied to the redemption of the security related to Medicare payments. However, Yellen noted that debt ceiling ceiling suspended under a 2023 budget deal will be reached between January 14th to 23rd, necessitating extraordinary measures to keep the government operational. Congress must address the debt ceiling by next year to avoid a default, which could have catastrophic economic implications. Historically, Congress has adjusted the debt limit 103 times since its first cap of $45 billion was set in 1939. Today, publicly held debt stands at 98% of U.S. GDP, a significant increase from 32% in just 2001. Failure to act would prevent the Treasury from meeting its obligations, underlining the urgency of bipartisan cooperation on this politically fraught issue. On Monday, the Biden administration announced steps to protect the Ruby Mountains in northeast Nevada from oil, gas, and geothermal development for 20 years. The Interior Department approved the U.S. Forest Service application to withdraw 264,442 acres of federal land from such leasing, initiating a two-year pause in a 90-day public comment period on the proposed 20-year withdrawal. Interior Secretary Deb Haaland highlighted the area's scenic value, cultural heritage, wildlife, and economic importance through outdoor recreation. The move comes weeks before President-elect Donald Trump, who advocates for increased domestic energy production, is set to take office. While the lands remain open to mining claims, the administration aims to ensure protections for the Ruby Mountains based on scientific and public input. Healthcare organizations may face new cybersecurity mandates to prevent leaks of sensitive patient information following cyber attacks on major entities like Ascension and United Health. According to Ann Neuberger, U.S. Deputy National Security Advisor to Cyber and Emerging Technology. Speaking to reporters on Friday, Neuberger emphasized the urgency of these measures, citing the more than 167 million Americans affected by healthcare data breaches in 2023 alone. The proposed rules, introduced by Department of Health and Human Services, aim to strengthen cybersecurity under the Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act, the HIPAA or HIPAA. Key measures include mandatory data encryption to render leaked information inaccessible and compliance checks to ensure networks adhere to updated cybersecurity standards. The initiative is projected to cost $9 billion in its first year and $6 billion annually over the following 4 years. Neuberger highlighted a staggering rise in the large-scale healthcare breaches since 2019, with hacking incidents up by 89% and ransomware attacks up by 102%. Hackers targeting hospitals and healthcare data have forced facilities to operate manually and expose sensitive information, including mental health records, on the dark web. Such breaches create opportunities to blackmail and threaten patient privacy. Quote, "One of the most troubling issues we face is the hacking of hospitals and healthcare data," Neuberger said. The HHS has not yet commented on the proposed changes. A U.S. appeals court has reinstated a nationwide injunction halting the enforcement of the Corporate Transparency Act, the CTA, a law requiring corporate entities to disclose their real beneficial owners to the U.S. Treasury Department. The decision comes just weeks before January 13th deadline that would have required most companies to submit their reports. A U.S. law targeting Chinese-owned TikTok has drawn sharp criticism from free speech advocates, who linked the measure to censorship practices associated with authoritarian regimes. On Friday, Pan America, Columbia University's Knight First Amendment Institute, and Free Press filed an amicus brief urging the Supreme Court to overturn the federal law, which seeks to either ban TikTok or force its sale. The groups argued that the law unlawfully infringes on Americans' First Amendment rights by restricting access to foreign media and noted that, quote, it recalls practices that have long been associated with repressive governments, unquote. They emphasized that any action against TikTok must carefully balance national security concerns with constitutional freedoms. In a parallel development, President-elect Trump petitioned to Supreme Court to delay the looming deadline for potential TikTok ban set for the day before his inauguration. Trump's attorney, D. John Sauer, argued that the incoming president's, quote, unique skills and mandate position, unquote, make him the best to negotiate a resolution that addresses security concerns while safeguarding the platform's future. Trump, who originally called for a TikTok ban in 2020 due to its Chinese ownership, reversed his stance after a recent meeting with billionaire investor Jeff Yes, a significant TikTok backer. Following the meeting, Trump received a substantial donation from Yes, prompting speculation about the potential impact of private interest on public policy decisions. The controversy highlights the ongoing tension between protecting national security and preserving free speech, as the fate of TikTok hangs in the balance. Meanwhile, William Webster, who's 100 years old, he's former FBI director under Presidents Carter and Reagan and CIA director under Reagan, has called on the Senate to reject the nominations of Kash Patel and Tulsi Gabbard. Webster emphasized the need for nonpartisan leadership and experience in key positions, stressing that the safety of the American people and the families of senators depends on these qualities. Elon Musk, CEO of Tesla and SpaceX, pledged to staunchly defend H-1B visa program, crucial for foreign tech workers, in response to criticism from President-elect Donald Trump's immigration hardliners. Musk himself, a naturalized U.S. citizen and former H-1B visa holder, emphasized the program's role in building companies like Tesla and SpaceX, stating, quote, "I will go to war on this issue, the likes of which you cannot possibly comprehend," unquote. The H-1B program, vital for U.S. tech industry, faces opposition from Trump's far-right supporters, who argue it undercuts American wages. Tensions flared after criticism of Trump's appointment of Sriram Krishnan, an Indian-American AI advisor, led to Steve Bannon calling out big tech oligarchs for backing the program. Musk, the other tech leaders, have differentiated legal immigration supported by H-1B visas from illegal immigration. Trump, who has been silent on the matter, has historically supported skilled worker visas while promising strict immigration controls. Musk's advocacy highlights a divide between tech leaders and Trump's base over immigration policy. German politicians from both government and opposition criticized Elon Musk for endorsing the far-right Alternative for Germany, the AfD party, in an opinion piece published in Welt am Sonntag. Musk, set to serve as an advisor in President-elect Trump's administration, praised the AfD's stance on regulation, tax, and market deregulation, calling it the only party that could save Germany. The endorsement comes as Germany prepares for elections on February 23rd, following the collapse of Chancellor Olaf Scholz's coalition government. Politicians, including opposition leader Friedrich Merz, labeled Musk's intervention as intrusive, while Saskia Esken of Scholz's SPD warned against external influences undermining democracy. The AfD, running second in the polls, could disrupt centrist coalitions, though mainstream parties have vowed to avoid alliances with them. The editor of the Welt opinion section resigned following the commentary's publication, while the paper defended its decision as a commitment to free speech. Russian President Vladimir Putin issued a rare public apology to Azerbaijan's President Ilham Aliyev after an Azerbaijan Airlines flight crashed near Aktau, Kazakhstan, following Russian air defense activity against Ukrainian drones. The Kremlin expressed condolences but stopped short of admitting responsibility, despite Azerbaijan's assertion that the plane was subjected to external interference in Russian airspace. The crash killed 38 people, with 29 survivors reporting a loud bang before the incident. The tragedy highlights the risks of civil aviation near conflict zones, drawing parallels to prior incidents involving civilian aircraft and military activity. Russia announced plans to end its moratorium on deploying intermediate and shorter-range nuclear-capable missiles, citing U.S. deployment of similar weapons worldwide, Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov stated on Sunday. The decision signals the final collapse of arms control agreements like the Cold War-era INF Treaty, which the U.S. exited in 2019, accusing Russia of violations. Lavrov noted that the conditions for strategic dialogue with Washington are currently non-existent, further straining ties between the two nuclear powers. The move raises fears of a renewed arms race with Russia, the U.S., and China, now pursuing advanced missile systems. Recent developments include Russia's use of new hypersonic missile Oreshnik in Ukraine, highlighting the ongoing risks of unchecked weapons proliferation. Now to Iran, Iran signaled that 2025 will be a pivotal year for its nuclear issue as officials brace for return for U.S. The U.S. President-elect Donald Trump's maximum pressure policy. Trump previously withdrew from 2015 nuclear deal, which had relaxed sanctions in exchange for limits on uranium enrichment. Foreign Minister Abbas Araghchi emphasized the significance of 2025 during talks with Chinese officials, but did not elaborate. Iranian concerns include possible Israeli attacks on nuclear sites and intensified U.S. sanctions targeting Iran's oil industry. The Iranian rial hit a record low against the U.S. dollar, reflecting economic instability and public efforts to safeguard savings through foreign currencies, gold and cryptocurrencies. Inflation is officially 35%, and the rial has depreciated by 18% since Trump's election. Five Venezuelan opposition members taking refuge in Argentine diplomatic residence in Caracas to avoid arrest described their situation as living in a prison. The residence has been without electricity for over a month, which opposition advisor Magali Mehta called a violation of human rights. The Venezuelan government attributes the power outage to unpaid bills. The opposition members have been sheltered in the residence since March, following arrest warrants. The development comes amid contested July presidential elections, with both President Nicolas Maduro and opposition candidate Edmundo Gonzalez claiming victory. While Gonzalez has fled to Spain, Maria Corina Machado, barred from running in the election, remains in hiding. Argentina and Peru have recognized the opposition's electoral claims, straining diplomatic relations with Venezuela. Argentina is also embroiled in a separate feud with Venezuela over the detention of an Argentine security officer accused by Maduro's government of involvement in a right-wing terrorist plot. Secretary of State Antony Blinken spoke today with President-elect Edmundo González Urrutia and Maria Corina Machado, leaders of Venezuela's Democratic Opposition. During the conversation, Secretary Blinken reaffirmed the United States' commitment to supporting the will of Venezuelan people and expressed that they expressed at the ballot box. He also underscored the U.S. Support for peaceful restoration of democracy in Venezuela in the release and the release of all unjustly detained political prisoners. In his remarks, Blinken reiterated that the United States stands in solidarity with the international community in condemning Maduro's anti-democratic actions. The secretary further commended the democratic opposition's resilience and highlighted the Venezuelan people's unwavering commitment to democracy despite ongoing repression and adversity. Now to North Korea. North Korean leader Kim Jong-un convened a key policy-setting meeting on the ruling Workers' Party last week, state media KCNA reported on Sunday. The meeting, held from December 23rd to 27th, outlined a strongest response strategy toward the United States to safeguard the country's safety and national interests. Specific details of the strategy were not disclosed. The KCNA report criticized the growing trilateral alliance between South Korea, the U.S., and Japan, labeling it a nuclear military bloc, and describing South Korea as an anti-communism outpost for Washington. The report underscored that the current geopolitical reality dictated the nation's future direction and actions. The session also reviewed domestic issues, including the government's response to this year's floods, which included relocating affected individuals to Pyongyang. In addition, North Korea pledged to strengthen relations with friendly countries. This 11th plenary session concluded a year marked by increasing military cooperation between North Korea and Russia. A summit between Kim and Russian President Putin earlier in this year resulted in a mutual defense agreement, which has drawn criticism from Washington and Seoul. The U.S. and South Korea have confirmed that North Korea has dispatched troops to support Russia in its war against Ukraine, with reports indicating they have suffered significant losses. Just last week, North Korea reportedly lost 1,000 troops in Kursk region while attempting to push Ukrainian forces out of Russian territory following their incursion. The Workers' Party plenary sessions, often held at year-end, are traditionally used to announce significant policy initiatives. While Kim Jong-un has previously delivered New Year's speeches, it remains unclear if he will continue this practice in 2025. The death toll from GU air crash in Muan, South Korea, has climbed to at least 179 as officials investigate potential causes, including a possible landing gear malfunction and reports of a bird strike. In a statement, President Joe Biden expressed condolences, saying, quote, "Jill and I are deeply saddened to learn of the loss of life. The American people share deep bonds of friendship with South Korean people, and our thoughts and prayers are with those impacted by this tragedy," unquote. Biden affirmed the U.S. readiness to provide assistance if needed. Now, an update is that today, a second South Korean Jeju Air Boeing 737-800 faced landing gear issues but returned safely, Yonhap reported. South Korea has ordered inspections of all Boeing 737-800s in the country. Now to Israel. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu was hospitalized on Sunday to undergo prostate removal surgery due to a urinary tract infection caused by benign prostate enlargement. His lawyer informed the court that Netanyahu would be sedated and hospitalized for several days, requesting the cancellation of his testimony scheduled for this week. The court agreed. During his recovery, Justice Minister Yariv Levin, a close ally, will serve as acting prime minister. Netanyahu's health is a concern given the ongoing regional tensions. The latest update is that Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu is in good condition and fully conscious after his prostate surgery ended successfully, his office said on Sunday. The Prime Minister has now been transferred to a protected underground recovery unit. He is expected to remain in the hospital for observation and for the next few days, his office stated. The Pentagon announced on Monday that a ceasefire around the northern Syrian city of Manbij between Turkey and U.S.-backed Kurdish Syrian forces, SDF, is holding. This follows a Washington-brokered ceasefire earlier this month after fighting erupted amid broader regional unrest. Pentagon spokesperson Sabrina Singh confirmed the ceasefire's stability despite earlier Turkish denials of such an agreement. The SDF, led by YPG militia, is a key U.S. ally against Islamic State militia, but is viewed by Turkey as an extension of the outlawed Kurdistan Workers' Party, PKK, which is considered a terrorist organization. The U.S. maintains approximately 2,000 troops in Syria working alongside the SDF to prevent the resurgence of Islamic State forces. Meanwhile, a Ukrainian delegation led by Ukrainian Foreign Minister Andriy Sybiha met with Syrian leader Ahmad al-Sharaa today in Damascus. The Ukrainian official was greeted with the Ukrainian national anthem and honors. This visit comes as Ukraine begins providing grain supplies to Syria, filling a gap left by Russia, which had previously halted the grain exports to the country. The meeting underscores growing cooperation between Ukraine and Syria amidst ongoing geopolitical shifts. And that's all from me for today. Please don't forget to tune in to AM Actual News on YouTube that I delivered this morning. Please join me tomorrow for the actual news in the morning and check out our newsletter. Now, everything has moved to honestnetwork.com, onestnetwork.com. All the links are in the description of this episode. And if you're tapping to listen while reading your newsletter, I'm very grateful. Thank you once again for listening. Don't forget that we will be off on January 1st, and from then on, we continue per usual. So have a wonderful and peaceful evening and morning, and see you tomorrow on the Actual News Podcast.